Hey, Lucinda.
Happy holiday season in the thick of it.
Yeah, what is this? The Christmas home episode?
The home stretch, yes.
The home stretch.
This will be going live on Christmas Eve. You and I are recording the introduction and outroduction on the Sunday prior. What did you get into this weekend?
This weekend, I had a lovely haircut for the holiday season.
You look fab.
Thank you. I had my friend's Christmas party. This is our 24th year? 23rd year?
So your Christmas parties can legally drink now.
Yes. Yeah. 23rd. Yep. Yeah. We've been at it for a while. It's so good. Oh, and then I had a lovely Hanukkah brunch today.
Tell me there was a Biedermann's tray.
So close, but Biedermann's was brought up. And yeah. So there must be a rivalry. So I guess there's another oldest Jewish deli in the city. And that's where, yes, that's where it came from today.
Still good.
Yeah, it was delicious. I love me some lox and bagels. How about you?
On Friday, I had my work party. Last year, I understood that the work party, well, we started at around 12:30, and I believe the last person standing was 1 a.m.
Wow. Does everyone still have their job tomorrow?
I left this year at 4:30. I just wasn't feeling that great.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Very unlike me. I took a sick day last week. I took a work from home day last week. This is the end of holiday season for me, and I think I'm not running on fumes, but
yeah,
about there. Last night, we took the boys to Opera Philadelphia's production of The Seasons.
Oh.
Was kind of a climate change cautionary tale.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Vivaldi?
Still Vivaldi.
But with a climate change theme running in the background.
There are no seasons, and everything is very, 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 and not almost or slightly. There was some Don Giovanni and Il Viaggio a Reims overlap with the cast for this one, I believe. I can't tell you exactly who it was. I did spot it in the program, though. I mean, fascinating comment on climate change. And unfortunately, the people that need to hear it probably aren't going to go to the opera. Anything else, Robert?
Let me tell you guys. This PCMS Ballet X collab.
It's sold out, babe.
Is sold out. And it was sold out for a while. But as a PCMS young friend, you got a promo code to get last minute tickets.
You got a cheat code? Wait, was that Ballet X or was that PCMS young friends? Because you're one of both, right?
Oh, you know what? You're right. Did I get it because I'm a young friend of Ballet X?
Who sent you the email?
I love that for me. Hold on, let me see. It was Philadelphia Chamber Music Society. With that, onto the conversation?
Let's get on to the conversation.
This is Robert Marsh, and you're listening to Philly Has Heart podcast. In this podcast, we sit down with the artists, gallerists, educators, curators, and other creatives who comprise the Philadelphia art world to discuss upcoming performances, exhibits, and other events and initiatives that are not to be missed. The art scene in Philadelphia is so rich that it can seem daunting. Consider this your weekend cultural recommendation. With me always is my producer, Lucinda Degerland.
Bonjour.
And today, we have a name to look out for on the posters of the world's great opera houses in the future, per the San Francisco Classical Voice, Olivia Prendergast.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks so much for being here with us today. As we do with all of our guests, we'd love for you to take us through your journey that brought you to the opera. What moments, both big and small, directed you to where you are today?
My mom always tells this story where I'm very outgoing. I'm very extroverted. So I love people. I talk all the time. I talked when I was really young. And she said I sang before I actually spoke. So on the monitor, she would like listen to me sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star with no words.
You're just keeping tune. The beat.
Yeah, exactly. So I've always like just been kind of involved in music. My parents are both scientists, but they are huge classical music lovers. And so we've always had like lots of music and different types of things kind of running in the background of, I feel like, my life. And so I've always loved to sing. I am also religious, so I'm Catholic. And in church, I had an amazing music director who basically brought me upstairs with all of the adults. I was 11 or 12 and everyone else was above 70. And she said, come and sing. And I said, okay. Yes. And I was so nervous. And she said, no, make any kind of anything you can hear, make a harmony, just sing melody, whatever you want to do. God loves to hear you sing. And I think St. Augustine says singing is like praying twice. Aww. So she always was super, super welcoming to me. And so I kind of just ended up singing at church all the time. And she's kind of one of the reasons why I started saying, oh, I think I'm good at this. I love this. This matters to me. This matters to other people.
Yeah.
So that was kind of one of the, I guess, in a way, a pivotal moment in my like journey.
Church seems to be huge for young singers as an outlet for them and a place for them to be able to learn and fail and do great and do things in front of audiences 52 weeks a year.
It's exactly that.
My gosh.
And it meant something to me too. Like that music kind of also taught me that everything that I sing has a purpose and really it speaks to the soul.
Yeah.
Music is more than just, you know, what you hear. It's something that actually resonates with you in your heart and in your soul. So that was something that, I will never forget and was a big part of my journey. So I really loved musicals also when I was in high school. And so I did a ton of musical theater. I was always the kid in the back because I was a great singer, but I was a terrible dancer. So I was always back there doing my best, you know. Yeah. So I did a lot of musicals inside, outside of school. I was in the choir. I was in all of the little like a cappella groups. It was in our vocal jazz program. Like I did everything possible with singing. I just really loved it. And at some point someone was like, oh yeah, where are you going to college? I mean, I'm like 15, 16 years old. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I had a vocal professor who is still in the area actually. And he's still a close friend of mine who said, hey, you know, I did opera for my whole life. He was actually one of the trumpeters on the Mr. Rogers show as well, which was really interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's very musical and he has been inspiring kids for a long time. He worked at UArts, I believe, for a long time as well before it closed.
R.I.P.
Truly R.I.P. Yes. And he said, hey, you know, you can do this. What if we looked at some classical music? What if I taught you how to sight read? And he kind of little by little scooted me into this more classical realm because he heard something and saw something or someone who would really, you know, enjoy this and kind of could do different things and maybe would be interested in more than just musical theater, since classical music has got all of the languages. It has so much in terms of like memorization and like meaning and travel. There's just a lot going on with it and generations of writing. So he introduced me to it and I thought, oh my gosh, wait, I think maybe I could do this.
Yeah.
So I applied to college with the intention of maybe I want to do this, maybe I don't. Mm-hmm. So if I don't want to do it, I'll pick a good school so I have a good degree from a good program. Yeah. So I picked Northwestern and I was grateful, beautiful. Very, very grateful to have been accepted to the program. It's a fantastic school for non-musicians and I think also for musicians alike. And kind of got there and was like, okay, well, I'll see how it goes. And it just, I don't know, it just went. It just seemed like every time, I've always kind of thought, okay, what are my plan Bs? What are my other options?
Right.
Because this is hard. And I think people right off the bat say to you as a young person too, if you're really serious about this, it's not going to be easy being a musician. It's not going to be easy being an artist in general as a profession, because it's now it's not just a hobby. It's not just something you love. It's something you do and it's your job, which is a very different and weird transition to make. And opera singing in particular is 0.0001% of people like really make it to that like huge big stage where you have, you know, Nadine Sierra, you have Lissa Oropesa, these kind of big names, or Renee Fleming, Joyce DiNonato, who are a little bit more household names, I guess.
Yes.
So it's a hard road. Some people always give you the spiel, but it seemed like doors just kept opening for me.
Wow.
So I kept following it. And as much as I questioned, I also just let it happen. Yeah. So that's my kind of early everything.
What has post-college life been like then?
It's been an interesting and wonderful journey.
Yes.
I loved both schools that I went to. I went to Northwestern University and I got a double degree. So I actually have an arts administration degree.
Great.
And also a vocal performance degree. And then I went to Indiana University specifically for opera for 3 years during the pandemic. And I got an opera degree that was a master's and also a performance diploma, which is like an extra little extra thing.
Pile it on, you know?
Right. No, I was like, maybe I'll go back for a doctorate. Did not do that. So think about it. But Yes. When I was at Northwestern, I kind of got a taste of fringe, modern, Baroque, early music. That was kind of like their specialty there to me. And I still think it is, actually. They have some of the biggest names in modern music particularly who work there. Some of them have kind of left and moved on, but I was lucky enough to have a lot of them as teachers and as collaborators. So I did some of the most incredible artistic collaborations and shows and projects with these people that really formed how I see music today and how I kind of love what I do or what I love to do. So when I went to Indiana, I thought, okay, well, they're a huge school. They have, I think now their voice program is 400 voice students across. So it's huge. Yeah. It's a massive school. They have 7 music buildings. At the time when I went, which was 2020, they had, I think, 250, 300 students in just in voice, which is massive. And yes. I remember looking at schools and thinking, like, all right, what am I doing here? What do I want from a school? Because the track is you go to your undergrad, you do that. You do some summer programs, so you have more things on your resume, more roles on your resume if you can. Then you apply to a school for masters. You get more things on your resume. You go to bigger summer programs. You get recognized. Then you do something that's year-long, like the Metropolitan Opera has a year-long program or 2 or 3 years where you go and you go to an opera house. So there's like a track for things. So I'm like, okay, what is going to be the best thing for my track? And I decided that I was going to go to IU because it was a sink or swim situation.
Yeah.
They have 300 people. The stage that they have is as big as the Metropolitan Opera stage, so it's also massive. So if I couldn't sing on it, if I couldn't make it there, if I couldn't fight for myself and I couldn't figure it out, okay, maybe I should pick something else.
Right.
So I figured, why not throw myself into it now?
Ooh.
Wow.
So I did.
Bold.
Thank you.
She made it out alive.
I did. Barely. They were doing shows during 2020, so we did 5 operas in 2020, which is kind of an amazing and unusual thing. We are all like social distance and we all had masks on and stuff. So it was safe, but you know, we were still doing stuff. And all of my friends at the time, even at the top music schools, they weren't doing anything. They couldn't do anything. And we had so much space in the school. So they were able to do stuff. So I actually sang an opera that year and a leading role. It was a very cool experience. And I went there because I was also like, okay, they do classical stuff. I did all of this modern stuff, like stuff after 1970. And I did all this stuff like before 1600. Great. I'm going to get the middle and see if I like that. And I'm good at that. And that's what people are supposed to do in opera. Okay, cool. I'm going to go do the normal thing. So I did. And I got cast in all the shows that were modern and Baroque. So... And it's like one, but I just ended up kind of realizing that those were the things that I loved the most.
Yeah.
Even though I kind of was pushing towards the more, I guess, in air quotes, normal music or the more recognized in the opera world, the more recognized things like Mozart and Puccini, Donizetti, stuff like this.
Wow.
And I still love that music. I think it's beautiful and I still enjoy doing it, but I do definitely have a special place in my heart where modern music in particular, very early music come in. And I just, people saw it. I don't think you can hide when you sing who you are in your soul. And I definitely could not. So they saw it and they saw it very quickly, I think pretty much everywhere I went. So I was at Indiana, did that. I went to a summer program that is an absolutely incredible place I'll never forget. And I owe so much to them. Marilla Opera Program, which is in San Francisco. And they are a part of the San Francisco Opera Company. They're a very, very rigorous, also educational program for young singers. And I, again, like learned just so much. And they kind of expanded what I thought about myself as an artist. Because when you're 24 and 25, people don't really take you too seriously.
Right.
And so they saw me and they said, okay, she's got some stuff on her resume. We'll take a chance on her. Which is like, as a young person, is so important and so amazing.
Yeah.
And they, again, taught me that the things that I felt sometimes were a problem with me. Like I had really specific opinions on things, or I had specific things that I liked, or I had, you know, I had real, how do I say?
Perspectives?
Yes, perspectives. I guess like very particular and specific musical and artistic ideas. So how I wanted to sing something, what kind of tone I wanted to use, if I wanted to, again, like recitals generally in school, you have kind of your normal German, French, and Italian, and I always would go like Russian and super, super early stuff and modern English, and it was just unusual, and some people were like, well, you know, maybe you should stick to some things that are more normal, and they taught me that it was great to be different. It was awesome to be different and keep going in those ways, especially if you really love it.
Yeah.
do it. Yeah, they were amazing people. And after I spent 2 summers there in San Francisco, one of my favorite places in the world. It's so beautiful. with its problems and all. I love it. So spent 2 summers there. And I was planning on going back to Indiana for a doctorate because I was like, I don't exactly know what else I'm going to do here. And I kind of sat there that whole summer and was preparing to go back and just realized, like, I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
It's like there was something in me. I was like, I can't do this. I have to like go and into the world and try to do something else. Like I don't want to go back. After being in school for 7 years, you're kind of like, I think I'm done at some level. And some people love it. And I did. And I still think about going back to school sometimes, but I needed to kind of spread my wings a little bit. So I dropped out of the doctorate program and was like, I have to go and do my own thing. I'm not sure what I want with my life anymore. If I'm going to be different, I have to do it my way, and it's going to be different. So I did. And now getting to the after school question, it was scary. You know, you go months on end where you don't know exactly what's happening. You don't know if you can afford your rent. You don't know if you're going to have a job or if you're doing the right things, you know, if you're building the right brand. And being an artist, it's not really about the money that you make, and it's not about being successful in what people say success is, although you still have to afford the normal people thing and be a normal person. After school, I was able to explore the things that I didn't think were the successful path, the right path, and yet they were the fulfilling path to me. And so some of that involved a lot of opera, but like I just sang with Opera Philadelphia. It was my first professional opera performance, and it was incredible. And we'll get to that at some point as well. Yes. But I also, I sing a lot in churches. I sing probably 10, 11 services every week in Catholic Church, and that is something that's become so important to my life and so fulfilling. But after school, scary, freeing, wonderful. Would recommend it to anybody if someone's listening out there who is on the school path and is nervous about getting out of school. Just do it. Take the plunge. It's awesome.
I love that. Kind of going back to the opera summer programs
that
seem to be amazing introductions to students to the world of opera. Can you talk a little bit more about how that works? Like, I'm picturing in my head a little bit more about what the ballet does, right? Their season might be from September through May, and then they're on break, right? But their on break could also be, I'm doing these summer ballets that are not part of the company, kind of a little fringe on the side. Mm. Sometimes it could be a festival. Is that same thing then happening in the opera world that then continues to give people outside of season additional things to do?
Yes, absolutely. So they're called young artist programs, where usually it's meant for people who are kind of branching into the world and they are not like professional. They may not be managed, where they have someone to kind of get gigs for them. And some are kind of smaller, some are bigger. When you're very young, a lot of them are paid. So you have to pay to go to these places.
Gotcha.
Which it is very expensive a lot of the times and can be very difficult. You know, you kind of wait until you're of a level where they pay you. And so it's not a lot all the time. Some are better than others, but part of it is the experience and what you get on your resume and who you meet, because, you know, I think, again, the arts in general, it's about who you know.
It's huge.
So much about who you know.
It's huge.
Yeah. So there are definitely tons of summer festivals, some that are linked to opera companies. Like I said, Merula is linked to San Francisco Opera.
Okay.
But there are other places like the Glimmerglass Festival, which a lot of people actually in that area just absolutely love. It's this opera festival that goes on from mid-June to late August, and they have operas kind of throughout the year or throughout that season. And it's for some people who can't afford it, they just kind of let them come. They say, you know, these tickets are free, don't worry about it. And then they have other big donors. But it's in Cooperstown, New York, so it's in the middle of Nowheresville.
Yeah.
And again, it's a great place to kind of go in the summer, and just for a lot of people who go on vacation. And then all of a sudden, oh, there's this opera company that's kind of here just for 3 months. So there is a lot of that kind of almost in every state and everywhere you go. It's a really important part, I think, for a lot of singers in general, because you don't have to actually be just a young opera singer. People do it who are fully fleshed out and fully ready to go.
Right.
And you also, again, it's very, like, I guess I'll say lucrative in a way, because it's a short amount of time, but you also get this community and you get to do more than one show, which is awesome. Yeah. So it's, it's an amazing thing.
I
they
love
do
that.
Have something similar to that.
I love that opportunity it creates.
It sounds like the opera version of summer stock. Is that
summer stage?
No, summer stock. Isn't summer that a stock thing? Fact checking.
In real time.
In American theater, summer stock theater is a theater that presents stage productions only in the summer.
So then, yes.
Proven.
So then, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So going back, you recently had your Opera Philadelphia debut as mm-hmm. Delia in Il Viaggio a Reims. Did I say that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Also, and not to center this on my sons, but it was their first opera, of which we only made it to intermission.
That's
but
a win.
Back to you.
It's a win.
What was your favorite part about working with Opera Philadelphia and more specifically that production?
Well, first of all, very honored that this was your son's first production. That's awesome. And making it to intermission on a show that was, I think, 3.5 hours.
That was long, right?
It's very long.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely long. Yes. So that's a huge win. And I thought it was such a fun show. It was a good show for kids. So I'm super glad that you got to come out to that and they got to see that. I think my favorite thing about the company is the people. They are exquisitely talented and absolutely some of the nicest and I would say kindest, not even nice, but kindest people that I've met. I think the cast in particular, Michael Eberhard is the person who does a lot of the casting, and he has, I think, a special talent for finding people who are incredibly talented but have really good souls. Mm-hmm. I think he can see inside of them and really see that, oh, these people, this matters to them. They're very good at this, but they're good people.
Yeah.
So the cast and, I mean, everyone actually in the hair department and the costumes department, the orchestra, I mean, everyone was just so wonderful. I made some friends that I think I will have for a lifetime, which is unusual, I think, in some regard, that you really feel like you can say that. You make a lot of friends when you do that, intense things.
100%. Yeah. All the emotion goes into it, and you share those emotions together.
And again, Anthony Roth, he's amazing at what he does, and this company is so amazing at making opera reachable and modernized for audiences today, which is super cool. And I could say so much more about that.
And to be able to do it to sold-out show after sold-out show after sold-out show.
The only opera company in the United States that has sold out their season.
You don't get that.
Yeah.
I don't think people have gotten that for almost 20 years. And then my favorite part of the production, it was the biggest set that Opera Philly has ever had from what I understood.
It.
It was massive and it was just bizarre and funny. And I love a comedy. I almost would prefer comedy over tragedy. I just think it's so much fun and it was so creative. And this was a premiere also for the production and for the director overseas. So she's from Italy and this was a U.S. premiere, which again, just took a lot of planning and a lot of preparation from the backstage folks. It was amazing. The production itself was so funny.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it just endlessly.
I've got a few questions for you.
Yes.
What was your favorite art piece of the art that came alive during it?
I was paired with the Keith Haring, and I love her. The girl on the inside, she is awesome, and she sat there for 40 minutes in tech in this costume that wouldn't move. I was like, you know, you could ask if you want to be let out of that. I think we're going to be a while. And she was like, really? Oh my gosh, it's really hot in here. It's so cool. It's so hot. Poor thing. But I think that was my favorite.
Yeah.
It was just so shocking and awesome. I had an art teacher in middle school who has since passed, but he was a huge Keith Haring fan. Yeah, it's art that has always kind of like been on my brain. And so to see it literally live was so cool.
Have you seen the Keith Haring mural in Point Breeze?
No.
We'll connect offline about this because going off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my other question. And I meant to actually ask Anthony this, but are you fluent in any foreign languages?
I wish. I am not one of those folks who has gotten kind of the hang of that yet. I know several of the people in that production were fluent in Italian. I know Alistair, who played the really high, fast tenor role that was in the production, he was speaking Italian a lot to our director. And one of my other friends, Sarah, she was Maddalena in the production, and she speaks French fluently. So she would speak French with Eleonora, our director, as well, because Eleonora spoke four or five languages.
Oh my gosh.
You know.
Wow.
So I do not, but yeah, many people do.
You are soprano. Lucinda does not know a thing about vocal range.
Guilty.
Can you take her and those who may be in the same boat through a quick primer of the different ranges and maybe any other information she needs to better enjoy the seasons next week?
So we have the four main Maybe I'll say five. Five main vocal ranges, which is
from highest to lowest.
Thank you, guys.
Yes. Yep, I got highest you. To lowest.
Soprano being the highest, alto mezzo being second, tenor, which is when you get into male vocal register, baritone, and bass. Bass is super, super low, mm-hmm. and baritone is middle between tenor and bass. They don't have quite the range that the lower bass has, and they don't have quite the range that the high tenor has, but they have that, like, pretty middly sound. So those are the kind of the five main ones, and then we also have extended sections of each of those parts, yeah. being countertenor, which is usually a man who sings in his falsetto, and I'll explain what that means exactly in a second, a man who sings in his falsetto voice where he has the same range as a mezzo-soprano. So Anthony Roth Costanzo is actually in that category. So that's one of them, a contralto, which is an extremely low alto voice who usually has the range of a tenor, which is unusual. And there are probably some other ones, but male soprano is one that comes to mind for me, which is also, again, and I guess I say a man, but it could be really gender neutral, really more as someone who identifies as male having a voice that can go up to as high as a soprano, which is a very unusual thing for particularly a biological man. And it's a very unique and pretty sound. And nowadays, going back to kind of countertenor land, way long time ago, they were called castrati, and usually it was young boys. Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
There was an SNL skit about this.
Oh, really?
And Ariana Grande played the young boy.
Oh, my gosh.
What? Really?
Yes. It's been recent. Probably within the past 3 years.
Wow.
I know no where idea. You're going, mm-hmm. though.
Link in the show notes. You're right. We lost her, folks. We lost her.
As you were saying.
Well, you know where I'm going with this. These poor young boys in a very long time ago who would have surgery to, I don't even know how to say this properly on air.
Castrate?
Yeah, castrate. Yes, yep. exactly. Okay. That's, yeah, that's it. Yep. Yes, castrated.
Scientific, I think yes. that's appropriate.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. So we're castrated at a very young age. So they never developed properly. So their voices stayed really high. They had kind of problems with growth hormones. So
you
usually
don't say.
Yeah. Yeah. These poor kids grew to be like, you know, 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", with rib cages that were just like literally barrel size. So they could hold these phrases for like just thousands and thousands of years, like just forever. And they were just seen as these amazing opera singers. And it's a lot of early music is written for countertenor in particular. But poor things had a lot of medical problems because obviously they didn't yeah. have all the right stuff. So their organs didn't work quite properly for such a big person because they didn't grow right. And so anyways, that's kind of the history of the countertenor, which now mm-hmm. obviously that is illegal. We do not do that. I think there is one recording on YouTube, if you're interested, of the last castrati. So you can hear it. And it is very eerie and interesting. Countertenors do not sound exactly like that. They use a different okay. technique. So anyways, gotcha. Those are our main voice types in general. I guess men and women have different ways of kind of producing those sounds. And maybe, again, maybe I'll say treble versus bass in terms of higher voices and lower voices. Mm-hmm. Different ways of producing that sound. A lot of the times, sopranos, we use what's called head voice, which is kind of this extended, I'll say extended technique, but it's not. It's not where you speak. Kind of where you speak is a little bit more alto, a little bit more mezzo-soprano, and you use a lot of chest resonance. So you have kind of like low. And when you get into higher stuff, you have to access a whole different space. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is through breath and through trying to like, okay, relax and just letting your body do what it's going to do. And then training those muscles to continue doing those things and reach higher. But a lot of it is also manipulation of muscles that, you know, we don't use normally. Yeah. So sopranos use kind of the back of your soft palate where you yawn a lot. That part is used a lot in kind of head voice for higher voices, for treble voices. So that's sopranos have that high register. Mezzos have that more middle register where you talk. Tenors, similarly, they have a similar thing where for lower voices, generally, there's a falsetto, which is like an airier quality that tenors usually have access to a little bit better than baritones and basses who have a much lower instrument. I guess I'll leave it at that. Yeah. And how you know what you are in terms of if you want to sing, a lot of it's what feels good because singing is really like being a pro athlete. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of training that goes into it. And there's a lot of eat right, do all the right things because your body is your instrument. It's your career. It's who you are. It's very complicated. So what feels good is usually a pretty good start. It's tough when you're learning how to sing because there's all these new things that are being activated in your body and it doesn't feel quite right. So you have to start to like unlearn what you learn sometimes. Mm-hmm. So what feels good and then what sounds really good. For me, my mom used to say, why don't you just be a mezzo soprano? They make more money because there's less of them. You know, there's so many sopranos out there in right. the opera world. And I'm like, mama, that's just not how that works. So really what you hear when I am put in front of a big orchestra, if I'm singing lower, you might hear some stuff. It's not going to be too bad, but what you're really going to hear is all those high notes from me.
Thank you.
But yeah.
What is something you wish the average Jane or Joe knew about the opera?
One of the first things would be that people know so much more opera and classical music than they realize. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. It's in ads. I think there's like a Toyota or a Lexus or some car ad that has Queen of the Night in it. It's yep. pretty awesome. There's tons of movie soundtracks that have so much classical music. Yeah. Video games, huge classical music.
So, Looney Tunes.
Yeah, Looney Tunes. Yep. Exactly. Bugs Bunny. Like, yep. there's just so much in kind of the normal everyday that we don't even realize. So when you think that classical music in general is kind of a faraway topic, it's actually not, because you know more than you think you do.
Right.
And you've heard a lot of it before. That's, I think, one of the first things I'd say is it's not unreachable. That. You know more than you think you do.
Yes.
One of the other things about opera is, despite being in another language, it still has all of the same things and themes as movies do. I mean, like love and loss and disease. And it's just, sometimes it's more historical. I mean, yeah. you have a lot of operas that are modern. So they're talking about very modern things. I mean, Opera Philly does a ton of stuff like Cold Mountain. They just did The Listeners. There was another one that was about Charlie Parker that they just did that was like jazz influenced.
Wow.
So there's tons of operas that are for, quote, the modern ear.
Olivia, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. Can you let the audience know where they can see you in future productions later this year or yes. into next year?
Yes. As I said, artists sometimes don't know where they are in the next 6 months.
Yes.
So I'm not exactly sure about everything yet. Doing two more projects with The Crossing, one in January. Part of that project will be in Boston with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. We're doing a piece called Poor Hymnal by David Lang. And as the composer David says, it's a secular hymnal. So it's kind of a lot of different religious texts and also political texts that is about this communal good and like what we mean to each other as people. And that's been something we've been working on as an ensemble for a while. And if you want to check it out, it's also on Apple Music and Spotify and all that. And I do sing on that. So
wow.
it's very cool.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that is going to be in January, and that'll be in Boston. And in March, we have a project called Infinite Body, which I believe is Ayanna Woods. And we're going to be touring kind of around the Pennsylvania and New York area doing that as well, which will be phenomenal. Later, and I don't know dates for yet, I believe I'm going to be singing with, I mentioned Lyric Fest with Laura Ward.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing an incredible recital that has lots of mixed media. So it's going to be dancers and visual optics and also song. And so that's going to be an amazing project as well. And I often sing with a company in the Philadelphia area called the East Passyunk Opera Project. I just sang on their showcase. It was a summer showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be singing with them, I think, sometime soon. We haven't exactly said what, but I highly recommend, just in general, anyone check out East Passyunk Opera Project. They're an amazing company. Everything's free. They always do kind of like small selections from operas, so you can kind of dip your toes into things. And it's a lot of stuff that you'll know, and it's so much fun. So highly recommend people check that out either
way.
That's
amazing. And where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram. I'm Olivia Prendergast Soprano, I think, on Instagram. And
we'll
I have
link a- you.
Well, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, please link me. And I have a website, so it's my full name again, oliviaprendergast.com. And you can, yeah, check me out on my website too.
Rapid fire questions then. Your favorite Philadelphia neighborhood?
I think it has to be Old City, partially just because when I was a kid, I went there all the time, and it still has this, like, special charm.
Yes. Slep on Philadelphia-based artist that the city needs to know about.
Marin Montalbano. She sings with The Crossing, and she's an incredible artist, and kind of, she's kind of a singer-influencer. Another person is Annika Kildegard. She actually just had an amazing recital last week, which I was so sad to miss. It was, like, again, multimedia, like, half singing, half spoken, visual arts, like, dance, incredible, like, just piece of art. And so she's someone I think who is on the lookout for list. Excellent. And I think they're super underrated, both of them.
Cheesesteaks with Wiz or without?
Wiz.
If you could work in any other medium and achieve the same success you currently have, what would it be?
I think I might have to go to my go-to, which, like I said, I'm a big extrovert. I'm very outgoing, and I really enjoy church work. And yeah, something I have very much enjoyed over the years has actually been funeral work, in particular. And there is a lack of women in the funeral business, from what I understand. And so for a long time, I thought, maybe I could be a mortician.
Favorite venue you have performed in?
I've performed in a lot of different kinds of places, and the one that always has kind of stuck out in my mind is the War Memorial Opera Theater, which is the San Francisco Opera's kind of main theater space. It's just, like, so gorgeous and special. Ugh. Something that was, like, extra magic about that.
Yeah.
Although I feel like I have other, like, weirder places that I've performed to, you know? Yeah. But that's one of my favorite spaces. Lovely. That's meant for performing.
And finally, your bucket list venue.
You know, I think I would probably not go for a stage as much as, like, you know, I mean, it'd be cool to be like, oh, my God, to sing at the Met. I mean, right, great. Right. And that would be awesome, too. But I feel like doing something in an unusual place. So I mentioned my friend Marin. I think they do some things in, like, catacombs and, like, unusual cool venues in New York. Yes. And I think doing something like the top of an old building or, like, you know, just something really underutilized would be something that I would really enjoy, like, creating art in an artistically unused space, you know? So I'm going to say that's a little unspecific, but I think that's where I would go.
Well, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your story with our audience.
Thanks for having
me. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Incredible. The voice, the experience, the way that you have to journey through the art world to get these moments on stage. I totally regret missing the Seasons by Opera Philadelphia this weekend.
She actually had me thinking that I could be an opera singer. I just needed to find my right register and let it happen.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is laughable because I'm tone deaf. But, you know, I hit a wall a few weeks ago. It was what I call a reacquaintance with my capacity. And my takeaway was we cannot make it to everything. We cannot do everything, try as we might.
Yes.
But in case you, the listeners, need ideas for the end of the season, oh boy, do we have ideas to keep you occupied.
Ensemble Arts presents Cirque Dreams Holidays at the Miller Theater until December 28th.
Philadelphia Orchestra presents New Year's Eve celebration on, well, New Year's Eve at the Kimmel Center.
Until the end of the year, David Dempwolf, Ghost Signals 1-4 at Practice Gallery.
Colors of the Season, the Muse Gallery Annual Member Show.
Gregory Prestigord Show, New Paintings at Fan Gallery.
Patricia Moss Freeland's The Stillness Between Us at Pie Gallery.
Jake Weinstein's Clanker at Works on Paper with Artist Meet and Greet on the 26th from 6 to 9.
And finally, the Under $500 Show, an annual member show at Third Street Gallery. And until the beginning of January, Edna Andrade's Bright Objects is ongoing at Locke's Gallery.
Thomas Pantone, Moving Towards the Sun at 5U Space. Until February.
Group show Materiality at Bridget Mayer Gallery.
A Usable Past, Reflections on a Nation and Its Inheritance at the Museum for Art in Wood.
And also, guys, I just want to say they're planning their next gallery groove for 2026. Are we allowed to say that?
I think so.
Better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
And with that, Philly has heart.
And art.
You've been listening to Philly Has Heart, celebrating the people, projects, and passions that inspire us. Don't forget to subscribe whenever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram to keep up with Philly Has Heart community.